I'm Mina.
And I'm Madison. And this is
Weekly Wondering.
Hi, Madison.
Hi, Nina.
How's it going?
Oh, we are here. We are back.
We are back.
Good morning. Good evening.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Oh. We took our week off and we are not really recharged, but we're here.
Yeah. It's like not recharged, but like I feel weird. Like I can't. I think it was it like the beginning of this week or maybe end of last week where I was like, I feel like we didn't take a break. But then today when we were like getting ready to record, I was like, I feel like I haven't done this in 4 months.
Yeah.
So
it's definitely one of those where like, you know, we went to Tennessee and then we took the week off from doing the podcast. And I think I came down from like my vacation high in that week. And now I'm just tired and like a shrew again. So here I am.
Definitely.
Grumpy as ever.
Definitely. I was just like, I don't know what's happening to me. But alas, we push on because we love you guys.
How strong of us.
Truly, where's my applause?
Please make us famous.
But that's really, we don't have any business, do we, today?
Not really. You know, the world keeps moving on, moving forward. Mm. We're, you know.
Circling. It's just
an endless circle of hell. But no, I don't think there's anything really to say. Thank you to everyone who has been catching up on your episodes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Still liking all of our posts. I hope you enjoyed us, you know, showing our faces on Instagram like the first time.
I know. I was like, we never did, like, I think at like one point in like a story there was like pictures of us, but I was like, we never did a formal like, look at my face. So
here's me,
you know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
We met black bears, so we're stronger for it, you know.
I love a black bear. I can't wait to become a black bearologist. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we did it and now we're back. And we're on episode, what, 13?
13. Here we go.
It's too many.
And what are we talking about, Nina?
Well, I ran out of pages, so I actually didn't do any research.
Any
I did run out of pages, but at the end of my research, so there will actually be no more episodes after this one.
It's all me, guys. Nina will just speculate the topics afterwards.
No, we are talking about mythical creatures today.
Spooky, spooky.
Yeah. This is, like, a topic that we have been, like, kind of talking about for a while, and then, like, we just keep being like, we'll put that in the... in the jar.
Because, like, you know, we episode 2, we talked about storytelling, which, like, involves a lot of mythical creatures. So we, like, kind of danced around it for a second there. But really, we haven't delved into a shallow dive of it yet. So here we are.
Delved into a shallow dive. So we're ready. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to talk first, right?
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit just about the basics.
Thank God. I didn't sit back.
Getting back to basics, you know?
Drink my water.
Yeah, hydrate or dehydrate.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about mythical creatures. And it kind of, mythical creature is the name we chose to call it because it falls under a lot of different names, such as a mythical creature, legendary creature, and often known as fabulous creatures in historical literature. And I went, yes. But it is usually a creature from mythology or folklore. Many mythical creatures have supernatural powers, some good, some evil, powers that even in contemporary times have no physical explanation. They're just like, and that bear could tell magic, you know?
And like, and that bear, a magic bear.
And we were like, yes. In these cases, the creatures that have, the creatures bear more similarity to spiritual beings. So, like, you have, like, angels and stuff like that that are kind of, like, a mix of, like, spiritual and, like, mythological. Will I get in trouble for calling angels mythological? We'll see.
I can't wait till an angel comes into your basement and smacks the shit out of you.
You know what is a myth? Scientology.
Don't come for them. What?
I flipped the coin.
What?
Um,
now I'm scared.
Anywho, Often legendary creatures came to symbolize vices or virtues or powers of good and evil. In many cases, their actual existence was secondary to the moral of the tale. So, you know, it was kind of like we didn't really care on delving into the details of why they were mm-hmm. half bird, half dragon. We were more interested in that they were telling children to tie their shoes, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Don't you know that tale?
The dragon, what was it? Dragon bird shoe tying story?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's it's a classic.
An original.
I'm going to start writing children's books.
Oh, God.
Terrible idea.
The parents that will sue you.
Oh, so quickly. Legendary creatures, or mythical creatures, or mystical creatures, have often been incorporated into architectural decoration, and you see it in a lot of, like, you know, murals and architecture and, like, sculpture. You know, it's very much, you see, like, griffins, like, on buildings, or, like, gargoyles and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
This is particularly the case with those that symbolize great strength and other powers. In contemporary times, many legendary creatures appear prominently in fantasy fiction. These creatures are often claimed to have supernatural powers or knowledge, or to guard some object or great value. So they all have, like, kind of a purpose. Like, there's a reason why they exist in the world. Like, you think of, back to, like, the Minotaur who was in the maze, and, you know, it was the, to defeat the Minotaur was, like, a great power and all the things. Mythical creatures have been part of human culture throughout the ages and across all parts of the world. They are not just, quote-unquote, talking creatures and animals able to communicate using language, and are also rather clever, as in Aesop's fables, which gives us a lot of different, you know, mythical or magical creatures. Mythical creatures are in themselves beyond normal reality and often are components of existing animals or animals and humans.
Mm-hmm.
So some of those creatures may have existed in the past, and many believers have produced fossils or other evidence for their previous existence. Some, such as the Loch Ness Monster, or my favorite, Sasquatch, continue to be cited and sought to this day. Listen, I'll get into it later. I love Bigfoot.
Listen, here's the thing about mythical creatures. It's like one of those things where, like, I am not really, like, any type of, like, superstitious, like, person, really, or anything to do with that. But, like, I respect a mythical creature.
Yeah. Like, here's the deal. Who am I to say?
Who am I to tell a Bigfoot he's not real?
Yeah. You know, it's, like, it's every time I hear that we've, like, only explored, like, what, like, 4% of the ocean.
Yeah.
And I'm, and like, people are like, who knows what's down there?
Like, yeah. I don't believe anybody when they're like, that's obviously, like, it's obviously just a manatee. I'm like, who are you to tell me
if that's a manatee or
that
not?
That's a manatee.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. It's just like, we're sort of like, who am I to say?
I love a mythical creature.
Yeah. And so while the origins of these creatures are varied and often disputed, they have played significant roles in human society. They have been educational, helped parents to discipline children and to express cultural values and norms, and have served to stimulate the imagination and desire that is ingrained in human nature to experience more than the physical world. So, you know, they're all about, like, whimsy and storytelling and, like, also just, like, to believe in, like, that there's more to discover, like, which is very cool and, like, very important, I think, a lot, like, in, like, you know, especially with children and, like, you know, showing them, I'm like, we don't know it all. There could be.
Buy me a creature.
Truly, I'm going to raise a child to be a mythical creature, to be what I will talk about soon, which is my new career path, a cryptozoologist.
Oh, my God.
I'm so excited. But first, so some mythical creatures, such as the dragon or the unicorn, have their origin in traditional mythology and were at one time believed to be real creatures. Greek mythology, for example, featured many creatures connected to the gods. Harpies were beasts sent by Zeus to exact punishment. In mythology and folklore, the world over, wonder beasts can be found representing the powers of good and evil, the vices and virtues of human nature, and the temptations into which human beings fall. You know, as we do. We love a temptation. The Temptations, quality. Anywho, one of my worst behavior today. Often incorporated into stories for children, fairy tales, such as fairy tales, these creatures were more real in what they represented than in their physical form. Like I had said before, like they are there to teach the lessons, teach the morals, yada yada. And others were based on real creatures, originating in garbled accounts of travelers' tales, such as the vegetable lamb of Tartary. I will give you no more information on the vegetable lamb of Tartary.
I love that.
I think I do have more information on it later, but I just really like there is a vegetable lamb of Tartary.
Of Tartary.
Cool. Conversely, some creatures downplayed as just storytelling have been rediscovered and found to be real in recent times, such as the giant squid. Good old giant squid.
I love a good giant squid.
So, mythical creatures are often chimeras, which is composed of parts of two or more animals. Some of those can be combinations of a human being and one or more animal. For example, a centaur, which is a combination of a man and a horse, and a minotaur, which is a man and a bull. Or a woman? I don't know if that's true. Do women get to be minotaurs?
I feel like they should be allowed to be.
Would it be a womanotaur?
A womanotaur. I'm going to Google it.
I'll keep talking. It should be noted that these were not always intended to be understood as literal juxtapositions of parts of disparate species. Lacking a common morphological vocabulary, classical and medieval scholars and travelers would attempt to describe unusual animals by comparing them point for point with familiar, such as the giraffe was called first a cameleopard, as thought to be a creation of half camel and half leopard.
I hate that.
Cameleopard. Otherwise known as the giraffe.
I really hate that.
In other cases, the beast was merely an exaggeration that made for exciting storytelling of adventures from far-off lands.
I found our answer.
Yes.
Okay. So it says, this is from stackexchange.com, questions, are there female minotaurs? Yes, there are female minotaurs. Nothing in the race description specifies that the race is male-only, the way that centaurs are explicitly male-only and hamadrids are explicitly female-only. I don't know what that is. Mm. Ergo, there must be female minotaurs.
Ergo. Well, that's good. So only men can be centaurs, but women can be minotaurs. That's fine. Minotaurs are superior.
Yes.
Anywho, back to what I was talking about earlier, my new career path, cryptozoology, which is the search for animals believed to exist, but for which conclusive evidence is missing. Sorry, I just had to take a second there.
Keep your eyes peeled for imaginary animals? Like,
so it's, hello, yes, I am a cryptozoologist, and I am looking for the Loch Ness Monster. It is my dream, life passion, whatever you want to call it.
Iconic.
So, among these are included some of the legendary creatures. The field also includes the search for known animals believed to be extinct. So someone out there is a cryptozoologist looking for the dodo bird, you know?
Yikes.
God bless them. Yeah. Big old salute to them. So, while cryptozoologists strive for legitimacy, some of them are respected scientists in other fields and, like, kind of do this on the side. Mm-hmm. And discoveries for previously unknown animals are often subject to great attention. However, cryptozoology has not been fully embraced by the scientific community. I wonder why.
Scientists said no.
Most criticism for the scientific mainstream is directed at proponents for the existence of more famous cryptids, like Bigfoot, the Yeti, the Loch Ness Monster, as I was saying, whose existence remains unproven despite numerous purported sightings and is considered highly unlikely by scientists, biologists, and zoologists alike. In fact, many of the sightings of such creatures were found to be hoaxes, which further discredits cryptozoology.
Aww.
I still like it, though. So, Nina, riddle me this. How do we categorize the types of mythical creatures?
You know, some of them fucking fly. I feel like.
Which leads us to our first one, birds and serpents.
Me, a fucking genius.
That was really great. There's a lot of different ways to divide them by, you know, regional, because, you know, a lot of them are associated with different countries and communities and cultures. Mm-hmm. Or there's, like, different attributes about them, different powers they possess, if they do possess powers. But this is just one way to break it down. So here I go. So, you have birds and serpents, mm-hmm. Which include things like the phoenix, which, you know, is a bird that a phoenix dies in the fire and rises again from the ashes kind of deal. You also have dragons, typically depicted as a large and powerful serpent. And, yeah, so different things like that. There's a lot of different cultural ones. There's the basilisk. Basilisk? I'm throwing a lot of letters in there.
Basilisk.
Our next category is lake monsters, which there are many.
I love a lake monster.
The most popular, you know, being the Loch Ness Monster.
Yes.
You also have Champ of Lake Champlain in North America, Bessie of Lake Erie. Whoa, Great Lakes. I've never heard of Bessie. Chessie of the Chesapeake Bay.
I hate that.
Ogopogo in Lake Okanagan in Canada.
Yeah.
Nahuelito in Nahuel Hoopi Lake in Argentina. So sorry for these pronunciations. Lake Tianchi Monster of Heaven Lake. And Isha of Lake Ikeda in Japan. There's so many. Bronzo Dinosaur of Lake Bronzo in Russia. Mokli Membembe of the Congo River in Congo. So those are just some examples of some lake monsters we have. Who knew?
I love me a lake monster.
You have monstrous creatures, such as Leviathan, which is a biblical sea monster. Mm-hmm. There's also Behemoth, which is a primal, unconquerable monster of the land. I had to close one eye to read that word. Really struggled there. And then we get into chimeras and hybrids. In Greek mythology, the chimera, as I was saying before, is a monstrous creature that was composed of several different animals. Other hybrids exist as combinations of human beings with animals and or birds, as well as a variety of humanoid creatures. So, mainly animal ones. We have a griffin, which is the body of the lion, and the head and wings of an eagle. Classic. Mm. There's also things like Pegasus, which is the winged horse, and the vegetable lamb of Tartary.
This fucking vegetable lamb.
I'm gonna read this one just because I actually don't know anything about it. It just kept coming up in my notes. The vegetable lamb of Tartary is a mythical plant of Central Asia believed to grow sheep as its fruit. Oh, this just got so amazing. The sheep were connected to the plant by an umbilical cord and grazed the land around the plant. When all of the grazing material was gone, both the plant and the sheep died. In the medieval period, the plant was said to explain the existence of cotton.
I hate that.
This is not what I expected.
I don't like
this
that.
This is not what I wanted.
I thought it was going to be like a lamb, perhaps in the shape of a fucking tomato.
See, I thought of, like, picture a lamb, but instead of, like, wool, it was, like, broccoli, you know? Like, yeah. That's what I was going for.
Yeah. I didn't like the whole umbilical cord thing. Yeah.
That made me unhappy. All right. Continuing on with types. We have part human, like the centaur, which we spoke about. And there's also a harpy, which were winged beasts sent down by Zeus to punish, most famously, the prophet Phineas. You also have sirens, you know, sirens love a good sing to the passing by sailors to lure them into some rocks and kill them all, you know?
I love a siren.
And then you have humanoid creatures, like a banshee. Banshees are omens of death. And messengers from the afterlife who would appear and wail under the windows of a house where a person was about to die.
I also love a banshee.
You have other creatures of humanoid creatures like gremlins, leprechauns, my favorite, an ogre. Shout out to Shrek. And Sasquatch. And then there's like an other category, which has some that like don't really fit into anything. Like Cerberus, which is the multi-headed, usually three-headed dog And it's known in mythology to guard the gate of Hades. There's mm-hmm. also a chupacabra, which is a legendary cryptid rumored to inhabit parts of the Americas. And the name comes from the animal's reported habit of attacking and drinking the blood of livestock, especially goats. How terrifying.
How rude.
And then there's also Kelpie, who is a supernatural shape-shifting water horse from Celtic folklore, and is believed to haunt the rivers and lochs of Scotland and Ireland. And so that's some different types of mythical creatures, and kind of how we divvy them up.
I love that.
Yeah, that's what I got.
Cool. Well, I'm going to talk to you now about some information about mythical creatures outside of the U.S. So when I was looking, first of all, my notes are a mess. I wrote, like, so out of order that I had to, like, draw myself a map. Like, turn to page 2, then go to page 3, then go to page 1.
It's like a scavenger hunt.
Yeah, truly. So when I was looking at, like, mythical creatures outside of the U.S., it was hard to just say, like, you know, Google mythical creatures outside the U.S. and decide from there, because, like, what it is that basically a lot of stories of just, you know, all of the creatures outside of the U.S. come up, which, like, helpful in some cases, not helpful in all cases, because mm-hmm. we would be here for 12 years just talking about 700 mythical creatures. So, instead, I broke it up into, like, 2 different things. Like, I did a little bit deeper of a dive. Yeah, just a tiny bit deeper. Like, not
like
not
waist
2 feet.
Deep.
Yeah, like, not 2 feet, but, like a 4 feet, you know, 4 feet pool. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I found information basically, like, about, like, European mythology and, like, mythical creatures, like, versus American, like, mythical creatures and, like, how we categorize them. And also, like, just, like, the differences of, like, why, like, the ways that we see, like, these creatures.
Yeah.
So, we will talk about them now. Well, so first, you know, you did all the background and stuff, but there was, like, all of this information also about, like, how, like, European mythology is obviously, like, a vast and fascinating area and, like, started with Roman and Greek, like, mythology and everything, like, as we know, and it's literally everywhere. But, like, there's been so much interest in the past, like, 50 years and, like, probably even further, but, like, most of the information I found, like, 50 years about, like, European and non-American mythical creatures, that a lot of people have, like, tried to break it down and become historians, if you will.
I wish I was a historian.
Me too. So, let's start over here. So mythical creatures come from cultures worldwide, and these cultures have passed down, you know, tales through generations and created untold volumes of lore, folklore, you know, and like lore, folklore,
of the folk.
Same thing, lore of the folk. Yes. And so, like, even today, like, every day, like, beasts and beings continue to, like, captivate us and stories of old myths, and, like, those old myths receive, like, contemporary updates and books and movies and things for us to, like, better understand them or for us to keep telling those stories. I read about, like, a couple of articles that I was reading kept bringing up Amazon Prime's Carnival Row. I don't know if you've ever, like, heard of it.
I remember seeing commercials for it, and I also kept getting it in articles.
Yeah, I kept getting it in articles. It's apparently, I, like, looked up a little bit of it, and it's, like, a fable, it's a TV show where fabled beings that are, like, fairies and fauns and things are, like, they live kind of as immigrants amongst humans in a war-torn land, and it's a whole thing. So, yeah, but that's what it is. irrelevant to this situation, but, so, apparently, there is a difference in how, like, we see and recognize different mythical creatures from the U.S. versus how we see them in other parts of the world. So, right now, we're going to focus on, basically, England and, like, yeah, basically England. And we'll talk about Ireland a little bit and stuff like that. So, this is, like, this whole seeing creatures differently is particularly due to the fact that, like, a lot of the myths and mythical creatures in other parts of the world are referred to or come from folklore instead of just, like, myths themselves. And folklore has become and, like, has always been in Europe, like, a respected genre. And, like, we, I guess, as human beings, like, see it and respect it more as a genre and, like, something to learn from than just being like, so I heard this myth, let's believe it, you know? So there's that. So the mythical creatures found in folklore often do a lot of different jobs. And so a lot of this, like, information in this specific article that I found it from was from a guy named Simon Young, who is a British historian of folklore and the co-editor and author of the book Magical Folk, British and Irish Fairies, 500 AD to present.
Oh. What a tale.
Simon Young, everybody.
Thanks, but, Simon.
Truly, thank you. But so he said that folklore myths are here to uphold morality, enforce taboos, connect to divinity, warn us against dangers, and most importantly, entertain. He was quoted by saying, if I had to sum it up, though, I'd say that they teach us modesty. There are things that are bigger than us, that we glimpse, and things that we cannot even conceive. Things that are, in any case, beyond our control. They are unknown, the darkness under the stairs, or off the path in the forest, or in our neighbors' hearts. That was Simon's quote.
What's in my neighbor's heart?
Bigfoot? I don't know.
My neighbor is Bigfoot. Got it.
And so basically, like, Young's explanation and, like, many other, like, historians of folklore, like, their explanations about, like, why we see them as different in, you know, Europe than we do in America was that, like, myths and mythical creatures that are thought of from America or from the U.S. are usually, like, fun or are made up to define something that, like, is scary or, like, bigger than us.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, in the U.K. and other places, like, while that is true, like, while they have that, they're also meant to teach and they, like, recognize that they're meant to teach and they respect those mythical creatures as, like, they respect the mythical creatures and, like, that they are bigger than us and, like, you know, are, like, they respect the stories that they come from and, like, how involved they are, like, in their culture.
Yeah, you know, like the shoe-tying dog bird. Is that what I said earlier? Dog bird?
I think he was a dragon bird.
Okay. Same difference.
There is a... Wait, what's the thing from... Oh, that's Wizards of Waverly Place. That's the dragon dog.
Yes. We should do a whole episode on Wizards of Waverly Place. What an in-depth culture they created.
What a cultural
all
reset.
Out of a sandwich shop.
Truly. But yeah, so that's, like, the thing is, like, I guess they see, and I guess we could argue that, like, we also see them as that, but, like, that is, I guess it's, they see that they are, like, a bigger, you know, part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So it was cool just kind of finding that out, that, like, there was a difference, or that, you know, some people saw that there was a difference. But then also, like, I did a little bit of a dive, on the fact that, like, there are, you know, past, like, European versus American and, like, all of that jazz. Like, there are many different, you know, myths and creatures, obviously, that we know all over the world and that we could talk about. But, like, instead of looking at, you know, those specific creatures and talking about them, like, looking at the reasons and, like, why these mythical creatures and their stories exist or, like, why we, like, continue to, like, know these stories and, like, tell them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them, like, have to do with teaching, but, like, warding off bad spirits and passing down stories and, you know, warning about certain things. And, like, I think I was reading about, like, in the Philippines, there's, like, a mythical creature that has to do with weddings that, like, people always tell that, like, you know, you're supposed to see, like, before a wedding, like, for good luck. And, like, there's, you know, in, like, not other parts of the world, but, you know, Native American culture, there are these mythical creatures, like, specific mythical creatures that have to do with, like, you know, that are, like, signs and spirits of, like, luck and family and, like, other things like that. So it's, like, you know, it's really interesting to find, like, what type of creatures or, like, what type of things certain cultures look into when it comes to, like, their mythical creatures or, like, the things that they accept and, like, the things that they, like, hold on to.
I just had a little bit of a thought of, you know, I was thinking about, like, what creatures or, like, warnings and stuff have, like, been used, and I was like, could Slender Man be considered, like, a modern-day mythical creature? Or does that follow more into, like, nightmares?
Well, so, I don't know.
I guess, like, but, like, you know, I saw Boogeyman on some of, like, the lists. Yeah,
that's the thing, like, is, that. Like, Boogeyman is definitely a mythical creature that we consider a creature, and, like, his main job is to scare the shit out of children.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't, and there are, like, some mythical creatures that I saw whose, like, main jobs were just, like, to scare the shit out of people. But, like, we do consider them mythical creatures, so I guess we could consider.
What's that new movie coming? It's, like, a scary movie. Is it, like, Candyman or something like that?
Oh, the fucking Candyman? We don't talk about Candyman.
Great. Looks fucking terrifying.
No.
I saw that and I went, I will have nightmares for months.
I will be watching Candyman, but we will not be talking about him.
Okay. Just silence. But, like, or, like, all of those different, like, you know, weird, like, you know, in the dark depths of the internet, like, scary, like, I can't think of what the website was now, of, like, where all of them, like, originated from kind of deal. Mm-hmm.
Fucking scarycreatures.com.
Yeah, that's the one. No, it was like a Reddit almost, you know, kind of thing. Okay. But like of, like, you know, where all of those different weird, like, back of the internet stuff came from.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm like, are those, like, our modern day mythical creatures?
Yeah.
Like, they're all just spooky and weird.
Slenderman, is that you? Terrifying, yeah. Motherfucker. I don't know. I guess probably.
It's, like, you know? A little different, but, like, kind of in the same vein.
Yeah, I guess it's, like, different because he's not, like, he's human-looking. Like, he's not an animal.
Yeah, he's more in, like, the, like, humanoid kind of, like, leprechaun area.
He is weird and creepy.
And, like, people, like, did go out into the woods and try and find him.
They did.
And stab their friends.
Yeah. So...
Moving on.
If you know anything about Slenderman,
don't talk to me.
Don't please hear. Call Madison at 555 Slenderman.
I, like, looked into the camera and, like, expected him to be, like, in the corner. He just, like,
yeah, so there's that. But that's, like, that's kind of the thing, is, like, each, it's like what we talk about every time we talk about something that has to do with, like, you know, every single culture is, like, every culture has a different one. Like, they all have different reasons for liking or disliking or, you know, like, keeping it in the fam. So, yeah, but it's cool to learn about all of them, so.
There's a lot of different wacky ones.
There are some wacky ones.
What was the one? I liked it a lot. I sent it to Nina earlier today. I'm not going to be able to pronounce this. The I'm going to call it the Nupepo. It's from Japan. And it is a passive, genderless blob one can eat to gain eternal youth. Mm-hmm. And I've never related to anything more. It just looks like a happy blob. Anywho.
I love that. So, yeah, I guess now we're going to talk about, like, some popular mythical creatures slash, like, some ones that we really like.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm gonna start, right?
Yeah, go ahead and throw some down. Throw some down. Who am I? A record producer of the 90s?
I was gonna say, either a record producer or a grill dad. Like, I don't know.
Let's just throw some down. Put them on the grill.
Like, what? Oh, God.
I've been watching Glee for too long.
Will Schuster, is that you?
It's really me. Gross, man.
So, I'm gonna first, before we, like, both shallow dive into some of our faves, I'm gonna tell you guys, I found, so, like, obviously, there are several different lists of, like, top mythical creatures, favorite mythical creatures, blah, 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 but today, we're going with a list from List Octave, called 12 Top, sorry, I couldn't read for a second, called Top 12 Most Popular Mythical Creatures Known to Mankind. So if you have beef with this list, don't talk to me, talk to List Octave. Number 12.
You have beef with the list, you're going on our beef list.
Exactly. Number 12, the Yeti. Woo! Number 11, Ogopogo. He's a lake monster. You talked about him. Mm-hmm. Number 10 is the Phoenix. Number 9 is the Chupacabra. Number 8 is the Griffin. Number 7, mermaids. Shout out. shout out to my kind.
You, a mermaid.
Truly.
H2O, is that you? Oh, I loved H2O.
I would give anything
wanted to be a mermaid so bad.
Yeah. Number 6 is the Enra. He's a smoke monster.
Ooh.
Yeah, he's like a smoke monster that, like, can, like, become a human, like, looks in the shadows of a human. He's quite creepy looking. We don't like it. Mm-hmm. Number 5 is the Kappa. He is a, like, lizard-monkey hybrid-looking motherfucker.
Okay.
Number 4 is vampires. Number 3, banshees. Number 2, dragons. And number 1, unicorns. So, yeah.
We love a unicorn.
We do. But I'm going to talk to you guys about my, I guess, 3 favorite kind of mythical creatures.
Yeah.
Should I do least favorite to favorite or favorite to least favorite? Least favorite to favorite?
Yeah.
Okay.
Always so, build up.
Okay. Coming in at number 3, the motherfucking Kraken.
The Kraken!
Release the Kraken. So the Kraken.
I love a Kraken.
Me too. The Kraken is a legendary octopus / squid like sea monster of giant size from Scandinavian folklore. So the Kraken dwells off the coast of Norway and Greenland and terrorizes nearby sailors. shout out to the Kraken. Over the years, people have thought that sightings originated from giant squid sightings. And you were saying this earlier, like how there are some mythical creatures that, like, people think that, like, were actual things before. The Kraken is one of them. Mm-hmm. And so these, like, squid sightings that people were seeing, no wonder they thought that they were seeing the Kraken, because they were seeing squid that have grown to 13 to 15 meters in length, which for us is, in America, is 40 to 50 feet in length.
No. That's too big a squid. Something's wrong there.
It's really large. So the size and fearsome appearance attributed to the Kraken have made it, you know, a common ocean-dwelling monster in various fictional works. The Kraken has since been the focus of many superstitious sailor passings in the North Atlantic, and it goes back to an account written in 1180 by King Sverre, I think his name is, sorry, King, of Norway. And most people that see the Kraken, like, see the Kraken as a sign of power and fear, because, you know, each mythical creature has, like, you know, things that people see it as, or they're symbols of things. The Kraken is usually a sign of power and fear, and the Kraken is not one that is sighted much anymore, or, like, people see sightings of, but the Kraken is one of the mythical creatures that is often tattooed, is what I found. Yeah.
It's also an alcohol.
That is true. It's a good alcohol, too.
Yeah.
That is true.
Is it a rum or a whiskey?
It's a whiskey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can picture the bottle, but I was like,
actually,
what are...
I might have just lied to you.
I'm like, it's definitely like a dark alcohol. Liquor. Closes no, eyes it is. Pictures.
I know, I'm like trying to
I can
to
see
picture...
the bottle. I know, like, one of our friends drinks it, like...
All the time. Like, it's a spiced rum. It's a spiced rum.
Great, amazing, okay.
Yeah, I was like, one of our friends does drink it all the time. The bottle is pretty. It is good.
I'm like, I Where... can picture it all. But also, it's college, it. So it's like
I
a haze.
See it. Truly. Seeing the Kraken bottle, like, through just, like, college haze with just, like, red Solo cups and, like... Guilt.
Okay.
Anyways, coming in at number 2.
Gonna cover myself in a blanket. I'm scared now.
Fairies. So fairies are a type of mythical being that are found in folklore of multiple, like, European cultures, including Celtic, Slavic, German, and French. So the myths about fairies are, like, not single origin stories usually. Like, they don't come from, like we just said, one specific place. They're not, like, one specific story. But they come from a rather a collection of beliefs. Various folk stories about the origin of fairies include casting them as either demoted angels or demons in a Christian tradition. Yeah. So a lot of, like...
They're demoted.
Yeah. A lot of the stories about fairies that come and, like... And I guess, so I, like, I will talk about, like, kind of the characteristics of fairies, but, like, I read this one article that was, like, you know why, for, like, Tinkerbell is portrayed as a brat all the time? It's because, like, she's, like, a demoted angel, and I was, like, that's rude. But, like, I guess there's a lot of stories about, like, people thinking that, like, one of the reasons that, like, characteristics of, like, the characteristics of fairies are, like, being, like, bratty and, like, kind of, like, small and, you know, kind of, like... tricky all the time is because, like, they've been demoted from their positions before.
It's just so harsh. Demoted.
Rude.
Like, you know, like, there's a bunch of angels. They're around the water cooler. Did you hear about Mark? He's a fairy now. Got demoted truly, last week.
Truly got demoted. But, like, so, yes, that's that whole thing. So the label of fairy has... at times applied only to specific magical creatures with human appearances, small stature, magical powers, and a penchant for trickery. But as folklore has grown, there are many types of fairies. So there are some that are miniature, some that are grotesque, apparently, some that can fly, but all of them can appear and disappear at will. Iconic. And so there have been some reports of fairy sightings, but most of them have been debunked because they are usually similar to, like, most paranormal activity, like, types of photos and videos of, like, a, you see that, like, yellow dot in the back, and everybody's like, that's called a street lamp, Susan, but it, like,
it's like, lens flare, god.
Like, yeah, they're like, it's a fairy, so it's like, there's a lot of that going on with, like, fairies. But yeah, so, like, there was, I told you, there was, I was reading that article about them that was, like, a lot of fairies that we see traditionally, like Tinkerbell, or, like, fairy godmothers and things, like, can also be seen, like, while seen as, like, light and fun and happy, like, they have this, like, tricky kind of, like, sometimes, like, not super happy demeanor, and it's because, like, they had a hard life. They had a hard background.
Yeah. I keep thinking of that one movie, and I can't think of the name of it, the one where the fairy, like, has to save the rainforest. No?
No.
All right, keep going. I'm going to do some research.
Do some research for me. And then, coming in at number one, my favorite, mermaids. So, the origin of mermaids comes from the word merfolk.
Merfolk.
So this comes from ancient Babylon, ancient Greece, and, like, Far East regions. The legends of mermaids and mermen are, you know, magical half-human, half-fish creatures who inhabit the world's oceans, and they date back to ancient times. They're not always benevolent. And in Greek folklore, mermaids, sometimes called sirens, often lured sailors to their death with their mesmerizing melodies. So the first mermaid story appeared in 1000 BC. The goddess Atargatis, sorry ma'am, loved a mortal. He was a shepherd man, and she unintentionally killed him. And so ashamed, she was ashamed though. Okay. So ashamed, she jumped into a lake and took the form of a fish. But the waters could not conceal her divine beauty. So then she was a mermaid. Oh. Yeah, how beautiful.
I wish some water would conceal my beauty, whatever it was.
Conceal?
I wish I was good at
talking.
And a mess. And so in folklore, mermaids were often associated with misfortune and death, luring errant sailors like the sirens off the course and into rocky shores. You know, how we give the sirens such grief. And also, I read, like, a lot of things were saying, like, the terrifying mermaids in 2011 film Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides are way closer to, like, what mermaids were first seen as like, what we see in Little Mermaid.
Yeah, they're definitely some scary, scary things.
Yeah, they definitely give me a little bit of the creeps, but I respect you dearly, mermaids.
Oh, yeah. Right up there with Scientology. I gotta stop bringing them up.
You gotta leave them alone. And so let's talk about some mermaid sightings. So the reality of mermaids was assumed during medieval times when they were depicted, you know, matter-of-factly alongside of aquatic animals such as whales. Mm-hmm. So people would, you know, see the whales and they'd be like, oh, look, whale's best friend. Mermaid.
There she is.
And there she is, just hanging out. And so there were many stories of mermaid women coming and entering parts of, like, different countries and then, like, being injured, you know, having an injured fin or flipper or whatever, you know, happens. And then being, like, rescued by the locals and, like, being nursed back to health and, like, going back to the water. There were also many a story of, like, sailor men, and not just sailor men, but, like, other men of, like, local towns falling in love with mermaids and their beauty and, like, you know, thinking that they found love for the first time and all of that jazz.
Garbage.
Spare me the details. But in the 1800s, hoaxers churned out so many fake mermaid stories, like, literally by the dozens to satisfy the public interest, and it became, like, such a trend that people were like, all right, enough with the fake mermaids. But in, like, recent years, there's been a couple of modern mermaid sightings. They are rare, but, like, they do occur. And, like, a lot of them happen where a lot of people see them at once, but, like, can't necessarily catch them on camera or, like, it's very quick. So in 2009, there was a report claimed that a mermaid had been sighted off the coast of Israel. The mermaid performed a few tricks for onlookers just before sunset and then disappeared.
Is this your card? And then it vanishes.
Amazing. Goes, here's your rabbit, and then goes away.
Again, yeah, so we've only seen, what, like 2% of the ocean? I believe there could be a whole mer community down there.
I love a mer community. Well, that was the thing, is, like, there were a lot of things about how some people, like, debunked several mermaid sightings as being, like we were talking about earlier, like, those are just manatees, or, like, that was a whale.
It's a dolphin with hair.
But it's, like, I've seen a dolphin before, like, and none of them have boobs. So, like, none of them have fucking C-cup boobs, you know? Or,
it's
like
a coconut bra that, like,
yeah, exactly. Like, what? Like, I want to know what's going on. So, yeah, but those are my top three. And then I did, like, a lot of research just about, not a lot, that's a lie. I did a little bit of looking about just, like, ocean mythical creatures, because I'm obsessed with the ocean, as we know.
Ocean bad.
That's me. And so I was just looking at, like, all these, like, ocean mythical creatures and the ones that we, you know, look at, like Calypso and other ones. So, yeah, but, like, the thing about ocean creatures that's very exciting and, like, we were kind of talking about earlier is, like, we have not experienced or, like, we don't know that much about the ocean. So, like, a lot of people that, like, debunk things about, like, ocean mythical creatures often, like, they get put in their place because everybody's like, how do you know? Have you been in the, like, depths of the ocean?
No, like, I think not.
So, yeah. But that's kind of my piece. Those are my 2 cents.
The Rainforest Fairy movie was Ferngully in the Last Rainforest.
Oh, yes. My favorite movie.
I remember it, like a human man like gets turned into like a fairy size and he learns about the rainforest. He's like a logger. So then he's like, we can't cut down the rainforest because he learns from the fairies that it's important. It's something like that. I don't know. I watched it when I was like 10.
I love a good like bring the fairies to teach you about like
nature and shit.
Yeah.
All right. I'll talk about some creatures I looked up. You know, first off, start off with a unicorn, because they're iconic.
Mm-hmm.
So unicorn, is a legendary animal from European folklore, that resembles a horse with a large pointed spiraling horn projected from its forehead, as you've seen. If you haven't seen a unicorn, picture it. It's not that hard. It sometimes has a goat's beard and cloven hooves. First mentioned by the ancient Greeks, it became the most important imaginary animal of the Middle Ages and Renaissance when it was commonly described as an extremely wild woodland creature, a symbol of purity and grace, which could only be captured by a virgin. In the encyclopedias, its horn was said to have the power to render poisoned water potable and to heal sickness.
Cool.
As you do. Written accounts of unicorns date back only 2.5 millennia. Depictions of the one-horned beast can be found as far back as humankind's history goes. It calls it a he here. I don't know why. It was known and worshipped in ancient Babylon. And two of the guiding powers in these times were the sun and the moon, represented by the lion and the unicorn. So the lion was golden yellow, ruling through strength and dominating all. Constantly chases the unicorn, silver white, who rules through harmony and strength of cooperation. So that's like the sun and the moon chasing each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yada, yada. And it's kind of unicorns, you know?
How as exciting. They are.
I thought of like the amount of like unicorn journals and like all of like the unicorn with like the galaxy weird like looking like hyper realistic pictures, and I was like, unicorns are wild.
They really are. Like the difference of like it's like the thing kind of similar to mermaids is like we see them as like so beautiful and like this like, you know, pink and purple like rainbow hair and like all these things when you're like, these are low-key high-key scary,
like, like, I'm sorry, your horn is used to make poisoned water clean?
Yeah.
What? Like,
you scare me.
And then I want to talk about vampires. Vampire is a creature from folklore that subsists by feeding on the vital essence, generally in the form of blood, of the living. In European folklore, word of the day, the lore of forks. Folklore, vampires are undead creatures that often visited loved ones and caused mischief or deaths in the neighborhoods they inhabited when they were alive. I love a good haunt the grounds you grew up on. They wore shrouds and were often described as bloated. This is very different than today's gaunt, pale vampire, which dates from the early 19th century. So they've gone...
Telling me they're not all Edward Cullen?
Yes, they are all. No, there was like a weird change where they were like, no, we want them to be dark, edgy. Scream the 90s.
Oh my like, God. Have you seen that thing that was like, I think I saw it on Twitter, that was like, no wonder, like, it was like, no wonder, like, Gen Z and millennial girls, like, have, like, fucked up, like, it was like fucked up imagines of, like, what, like, their boyfriend should look like, Edward, or, like, treat them like, and it was like, vampires are literally, like, 1,000 years old, like, going after 16-year-old girls, like, you're all a mess, and I was like, true.
I mean, like, I can't even get into, like, the twilight years of, like,
yeah,
because, like, that was, like, elementary.
Like, to we think about the fact that, like, yeah, like, we really, like, I knew some hardcore,
like,
Twilight fans, but we were definitely, like, young.
I've told you about that girl that was in my class who, like, went around biting people. She would come up to you, I'm not gonna name her name because I'm sure she's grown so much since then, But she, like, on the playground, was very Team Edward, was very into vampires, and was convinced she was a vampire. And so she would come up to you and ask if you wanted to become a vampire. And then she would bite you.
I would literally... Oh, God.
And that was elementary school, folks. So that's a little bit about vampires. They're... But I want to talk about what's most important to me, which is Sasquatches, Bigfoot, and Yetis. So basically, I'll talk a little bit about Yetis first, just because, you know, Yetis, the cousin, the wintry cousin of the Bigfoot, you know?
Bigfoot's winter cousin.
Like, it's winter collection, you know? So Yeti was once better known as the Abominable Snowman, and it is a creature said to live in the mountains of Asia. It sometimes leaves tracks in the snow, but is said to also dwell below the Himalayan snow line. Despite dozens of expeditions into the remote mountain regions of Russia, China, and Nepal, the existence of the Yeti remains unproven. This is an article from 2017 by Benjamin Radford that I am reading from. He talks all about the Yetis. The Yeti is said to be a muscular, covered with a dark grayish or reddish brown hair, weighing between 200 and 400 pounds. And it is relatively short compared to the North America's Bigfoot, averaging about 6 feet in height. So it's just like a really hairy dude. Like, just, you know, traversing the Himalayas. Like,
just living his life.
Just like a large man in a fur coat, you know? But Yetis come in a variety of shapes. There was, like, a whole article comparing, like, of, like, scientists, and by scientists I mean scientist wannabes, yelling about what they think Yetis look like and the different, like, cultural interpretations of it. Because, like, some are viewed as, like, you know, it's back to, like, the moral of the stories is often warning of avoiding dangerous wild animals or to stay close within the community. And then you have folks like, you know, good old Alexander the Great, who demanded to see a Yeti when he conquered the Indus Valley in 326 BC. But the local people told him they were unable to present one because the creatures could not survive at a low altitude. I love a good demand to see a Yeti.
Leave the Yetis alone.
They just want to be up in the wintry times. In modern times, when Westerners started traveling to the Himalayas, the myth became more sensational. In 1921, the journalist named Henry Newman interviewed a group of British explorers who had just returned from Mount Everest at expedition. The explorers told the journalist that they had discovered some very large footprints on the mountain, which their guides had attributed to Meto Kangmi, essentially meaning man-bear-snowman.
Man-bear-snowman.
Newman got the snowman part right, but mistranslated Meto as filthy. So we love a mistranslation. Then he seemed to think abominable sounded even better, and more menacing on paper for his readers. So thus the legend was born. So really, we should have been calling it the Man Bear Snowman, and yet here we are with the Abominable Snowman.
Ugh.
Abominable. So it's a lot of, with both Bigfoot and Yetis, like, it's kind of all of the same story of, like, the people, like, you know, here's this, we thought we saw it, and then people are like, no, it was just this, or, like, with Bigfoot, there was this whole thing where, like, the FBI, like, kind of humored these scientists, and were like, okay, sure, we'll do some DNA tests on this hair samples you found of Bigfoot, and it was, like, just deer hair. Or like with the Yetis, the most commonly one is it's mistaken with the Asian black bear. So like, and because they stay very up in like the higher altitudes.
They're pretty high up.
And they're like very scary looking bears. And I was looking at some pictures. They're spooky.
I was gonna say they're spooky bears.
Yeah, because it was like a same, like, you know, trying to figure, like, you know, DNA testing with the Yeti. It was like, we had 9 hair samples and 8 of them were different types of bears, and then 1 was a dog. And I'm like, how did we get to the point where we thought this was a Yeti, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I have more questions about that.
Yeah.
But so there was this, another instance of it, was a researcher Myra Shackley had offers the following description, reported by two hikers in 1942 who saw, quote, two black specks moving across the snow about a quarter mile below them, unquote. Despite the significant distance, they offered the following detailed description. The height was not much less than 8 feet. The heads were described as squarish, and ears must lie close to the skull because there was no projection from the silhouette against the snow. The shoulder sloped sharply towards the powerful chest, covered in reddish-brown hair, which formed a close body fur mix with long, straight hairs hanging downward. Another person saw a creature about the size and build of a small man, and head covered with long hair, but face and chest not very hairy at all. Reddish-brown hair in color, and it was grubbing up roots and occasionally emitting loud, high-pitched cry. So... it's not clear if these, it's not clear if these sightings were real hoaxes or misidentifications. The legendary mountaineer, Reinhold Messner, who spent months in Nepal and Tibet, concluded that large bears in their tracks often were mistaken for the Yeti. There's also, like, another instance where, like, they go to that same spot and, they're like, oh, those are just some rocks. They're just some vertical standing
hairy
rocks.
Hairy rocks?
You know? It was also a quarter of a mile away, so, like, they were like, yes.
My eyes work at a quarter of a mile. I don't know what to tell anybody.
Well, you got laser eyes, so.
That's true.
My eyes without my glasses. I'm like, yes, I see 10 Yetis.
Are you a Yeti or a rock?
You know, I've made the mistake before. And then, like, the Russian government at one point took interest in the Yeti in 2011 and organized a conference of Bigfoot experts in Western Siberia.
That's what I'm talking about.
And they were like, yes, this is our goal. Basically, they all got together, and this Bigfoot researcher and biologist, John Bindernagel, claimed that he saw evidence that the Yeti not only existed, but built nests and shelters out of twisted tree branches. The group made headlines around the world when they issued a statement that they had indisputable proof of the Yeti and were 95% sure it existed based on some gray hairs.
A Yeti nest?
Yeah, a nest of Yetis.
That scares me.
And, you know, they, Bindernagel may have been impressed, but another scientist who participated in the same expedition concluded that the quote-unquote indisputable evidence was hoaxed. Jeff Meldrum, a professor of anatomy and anthropology at Idaho State University, who endorses the existence of Bigfoot, said that he suspected the twisted branches may have or had been faked. Not only was there obvious evidence of tool-made cuts to in the supposed Yeti twisted branches, but also the trees were conveniently located just off of a well-traveled trail and hardly in a remote area.
Listen, who says the Yeti doesn't know how to use a fucking pair of clippers?
It's got like an axe, like a little hand axe. Like,
yeah. Ding, ding. The Yeti could be very, very versed in tools.
Yeah, you know, you never know. And yeah, that's kind of the Yeti. You know, people still believe, people still search. It's all good.
Well, we saw Bigfoot, so.
We did see Bigfoot. And let's talk about how the Bigfoot legend began.
Iconic.
See right there how the Bigfoot legend began.
It was with Nina and Madison.
Yes.
On an 8 Mile hike.
So there he is. There he is, folks. I wish we saw Bigfoot.
Me too.
Oh, my best friend. This is an article by Becky Little. And she says, in 1958, journalist Andrew Genzoli of the Humboldt Times highlighted a fun, if dubious, letter from a reader about loggers in Northern California who discovered mysteriously large footprints. And they said, maybe we have a relative of the abominable snowman of the Himalayas. And he jokingly wrote this in his column alongside the letter. But people were like, yes, we have a Sasquatch.
We do.
Because, you know, we love a good conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And so he ended up writing, like, all these follow-up articles, and, like, it ended up being because the footprints reported the names of the loggers and had given the so-called creatures who left the tracks, they called him Bigfoot because, like, he left these big footprints, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And so the legend was born. And, you know, basically,
in the 50s, like, it became very common for people to be like, oh, like, there's a wild man out there, like, you know, and it was this, all of this, of different Sasquatches, of like, there's this wild man out in the woods, like, I saw a footprint, or like, you see the classic, like, video of, like, the, like, you know, hairy creature walking through the woods,
mm-hmm.
and it, like, talks about how all of them are really probably faked, and, like, are just bear tracks, or, like, people dressing, or, like, you know, the loggers turned out to be, like, you know, were, faking it, like, and creating the hoax because, like, they thought it'd be funny for people to see it.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of things like that, which makes me sad because I really believe in Bigfoot.
Listen, I don't know. We saw bear tracks. We also saw Bigfoot
track. Yeah, that Bigfoot track was very different than the bear tracks.
That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Bigfoot, we respect you.
And, like, you know, it was a whole, like, it very much was... like, different ways of, it was popularized, like, in the 1970s, you know, it was, like, this whole, like, pseudo-documentaries were investigated his existence, and films were portraying him as a sexual predator, like, Bigfoot, Bigfoot's had a journey, and, like, you think of, like, the, I can't think of it, it's the beef jerky, line that has the Sasquatch, like, commercials all the time, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's such, like, I do know what you're talking about. Who eats jerky anyways? Not me. But, like, you know, you think of, like, how much of a pop culture icon Bigfoot is, of, like, how it's, like, how many documentaries and movies and, like, different articles have, like, appeared about it, because, like, people will always get excited seeing something about, like, a new Bigfoot sighting, or, like, here's some new information about Bigfoot, or, like...
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen some, I remember watching this, like, weird, it was a while ago, it was on Netflix, and it was this documentary, like, series about Bigfoot, and, like, these people who were, like, you see these twigs? Like, they were in a forest, and they'd be, like, you see these, how this branch is bent over that branch? It's a Bigfoot house. And we were, like, okay. I believe you, sir.
It's a bird house. Like, what do you mean? Like,
it's just a stick that fell onto another stick. I don't know what to tell you. But, yeah, so it's, like, all up into, like, you know, people will continue to come out with, and, like, as I was saying earlier, like, the FBI did do an investigation, because they were, like, can you please test these hair samples? Because, like, you know, it'll meet, like, it'll be great. And, like, in, like, and the FBI was, like, you know, we really only do the DNA sample thing for, like, murders and crime. But, like, you know, in the name of science, this was
sure.
What, in the, when was this? Oh, it was 1976. So, like, you know, what else were they doing?
I don't know. Probably, like, they could have been catching Ted Bundy. I don't know.
Probably, like, true. But they were instead like, you know what? For the people. We're going to test these Bigfoot hairs.
These Bigfoot hairs. Iconic.
Yeah. So, that's Bigfoot.
We love a mythical creature, is what we're saying.
I just want Bigfoot to be real.
All mythical creatures are our friends.
Yeah. Mermaids and Bigfoot. BFFs.
Yeah. Is that all we have?
I think so.
All right. Is it time?
Yeah, go for it.
Guys, it's time for Artist of the Week.
I like that we've developed a theme song over the days.
I don't know why, but here we go. So this week's Artist of the Week is the account @shaunas.makes. So the account makes one-of-a-kind jewelry of all sorts, mainly earrings and rings, as you'll see, like, when you go to the Instagram. And if you look at the pics of the jewelry, pretty much everything is made out of pressed flowers.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, these pieces are truly one-of-a-kind. Shaunas has an Etsy account as well. The link is in the Insta bio, and that's where you'll find all of the jewelry that is for sale and, like, up and coming and such like that. There are tons of, like, shapes and sizes and, like, so many things, so, like, there's really something for everyone. Like, it's not just, like, hoops or just, like, you know, like, dangly ones or whatever you want to say. Like, there's something for everyone. But yeah, we really love this artist's work. So please go follow the account and buy everything that you can. That Insta account is, again, @Shaunas, Shauna, SHAUNAS.makes. So yeah, that is Artist of the Week.
Amazing. I love that.
Yeah, me too. I, like, really have to decide what I'm gonna buy, because I, like, was looking, I think it was yesterday, and I was like, I have to stop buying earrings. And then I was like, oh, I have to buy these earrings.
Literally, so the amount of times Nina and I send back and forth, like, look at these that are being made, and, like, yeah, just get so excited that we have to, like, withhold because we're, like, so much money.
Yeah, but I love them, so I have to buy at least one pair, you know?
Yeah,
so definitely. I gotta decide what my pair is gonna be.
Amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, that's Artist of the Week. So yeah, it's closing time.
Yeah. And we, you know, thank you. We're so happy to be back.
We are back.
We're gonna do so many new topics. None of them decided yet, so have an
we'll
idea.
We'll be repeating all topics from episode 1 through 13.
Let's
over.
Talk about Michigan. but if you have any ideas, let us know. DM us, send us a carrier pigeon, like, you know.
Yeah, smoke signals. Love those.
Bring them back. All right. Well, as always, remember to wear a mask.
Please.
Remember that Black Lives Matter.
Oh, my God.
Remember to vote. Make sure you're registered to vote. Looking up your details. Applying for absentee ballots if it's time in your state.
Immediately.
We have to save the UPS. The USPS. The Postal Service. UPS is fine. Fuck them.
The UPS is fine. We have to save the U.S.
The Postal Service.
Damn it.
Buy some stamps. Yeah, send a letter to your grandma.
That's
our mantra.
The list just can't, we can't grow anymore.
No, that's it for
the
now.
The list keeps growing.
We have to solve some of those
add more to the list. So please do something. Please. Buy a stamp. That's it.
We'll see you guys next week.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.